Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I'm John Batchelor. Paul Mueller's here, Senior Research Fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research, and he's done me the favor of writing up a book that I do not believe can make my reading list. It's 600 pages, and it requires the attention of professional economists and those who read this. I'm an amateur reader, but I consume the news. And so I come to tariffs, now a debate, but also I'll put them in action, tariffs and the People's Republic of China's EV production line. Is it relevant to these cases, Paul, that the EV production line in China is said to have somewhere between 120 and 150 companies producing EVs? BYD is the number one of that lot. However, I'm told on bad days, BYD does not have a profit to show. And in July of this year, their production of new vehicles declined 3.8%. Meanwhile, they wait to get through the tariff barriers or even the permission barriers of major states around the world. All of that, I'm presuming, is a product of industrial policy. The CCP said, do this, and everybody suddenly was building EVs all over the country. Now, that doesn't strike me as an amateur as something to emulate, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, the issue with China and the way you describe it, I think, is accurate, where the CCP is giving directions, incentives, stimulus to produce, whether it's solar panels or EVs. It's very easy, or maybe I shouldn't say very easy. It's relatively easy to focus on producing a lot of one thing, right? Producing a lot of steel, producing a lot of roads, producing a lot of vehicles. Now, I don't want to downplay. I mean, there are a lot of impressive things about China. Their adoption of technology is impressive. They have a lot of market signals that they're listening to in various parts of the country. They're open to market. So they're in a far better situation than, say, the Soviet Union was back in the 60s and 70s. But they have this problem, which is they can tell BYD and these other manufacturers, build more cars, dominate the EV market, build. But the whole point of a price system in markets is that we need to build many different kinds of things. It's not as if electric vehicles are the only valuable good in the world. And so an important question is, well, how many electric vehicles ought to be manufactured, and how much are people willing to pay for, and what are the resource costs that go into it? Those kinds of calculations that normally businessmen make, that companies have to make in order to keep their costs under control and to keep their revenues high and maintain profit, that's a constantly shifting and changing based on consumer demand and various people entering and exit the market, how the economies are doing. And in China, they don't really have those signals, right? They're taking their signals, again, from the government. And that means that they're liable to overproduce. And so if you think about China's construction industry, for example, China has built an incredible amount over the last 30 years in terms of roads, houses, cities, railroads. I mean, they've built a ton, and it's very impressive. And yet you also hear of these ghost cities where they have built so much that there's no demand or use for them. You hear about the massive debt load that various provinces have or some of the largest construction companies have. And that is one of the side effects of this industrial policy that, you know, again, they've had some success in expansion and building, but it's not subject to the desires of consumers. It's not subject to feedback and market dynamics. And that leads to, or often leads to, a great deal of overproduction and eventually a misallocation of resources. And again, there's a lot of news coming out of China, but I think what we're likely to see over the next years or even decades is much slower growth out of China. And they're going to have, I think, many problems, debt problems and overproduction problems for years to come because they have leaned so heavily on government-directed industrial policy and goals.
Do the authors Fastenau and Fletcher have a definition of free markets that is different than mine, which is competition at the marketplace is how you pick winners and losers? who makes it best and who the consumer responds to in our economy? Do they have a different definition of free market?
No, I think they define it that way. I think that their view, they're not anti-free market. I think their view that they try to convey is a free market plus view. We want the free market plus some fixes or plus some direction. So they acknowledge, I mean, this is, again, I think one of the merits of their book, they acknowledge the role of markets and property rights and competition historically. And so they're not trying to, you know, centrally plan the economy. But they do argue that there are failures that occur in free markets in terms of, you know, traditional externality or public good issues. The market's going to underinvest, say, in certain kinds of research, or it's going to overly focus, say, on short-term profits. So they argue it's the free market works okay, but we can make it better. And so there's another quote in my review by another famous economist, Alfred Marshall, who makes a similar point to Smith, where he says, you know, it might be true that in a narrow theoretical sense, a very targeted industrial policy might improve a market outcome. He says it's possible, maybe a little bit. But that is a very unlikely scenario. The far more likely scenario is that you're going to have special interests driving the decision. It's not going to be flexible based on market changes, and you're going to have huge distortions. And we could point to all kinds of distortions, even in the U.S. economy. We think about solar and wind power subsidies, or we think about the EV mandate or other kinds of restrictions on building. There have been many, many cases of failed industrial policy that came with real costs, you know, lost economic activity, wasted taxpayer money, and, you know, not least of which, various kinds of corruption or at least shady kinds of business deals going on between industries that are being favored by the government and the government officials and elected officials who made those deals in the first place.
Paul Miller, Senior Research Fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research, writing of a new book looking at free markets and industrial policy for the United States, winning the competition for good jobs and high-value industries, by Mark Fastineau and Ian Fletcher.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.